One day, Nevada rancher Wayne Haig went to war with the federal government over his right to use federal land. Wayne Haig's war is now in its 30th year, and despite having passed on, Wayne Haig fights on. Wayne Haig's war leads us to ask, should public property be used for private gain?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 607th edition of the Food Chain Radio right here on News Talk Radio, or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Las Flores who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Nikki James on the boards.
Hello.
Producer Carol Stafford.
Hello, everyone.
Karen Howard.
Hello.
Folks, federal government owns approximately one-third of the land in the United States, and over half of that land is in the West. 87% of Nevada's land area is federally owned, and these lands are divided into six grazing districts with permission to graze animals on the land granted to area landholders via grazing permits. Grazing permits are taxed as real property. The permits are attached to the land, so if a landholder sells or leases land, the grazing permit stays with that land. But then, grazing and water rights to the Humboldt National Forest and Monitor Valley had been attached to Wayne Haig's land since the mid-1800s. But then one day in 1979, the federal government showed up on Wayne Haig's ranch and staked a claim on his grazing permit. Rather than submitting meekly to the taking, Wayne Haig went to war. And his war leads us to ask, should public property be used for private gain? Here to help us reach for an answer, we have Ramona Morrison, who is a daughter of rancher Wayne Haig of Monitor Valley, Nevada. Ramona, welcome to the Food Chain.
Good morning.
Where on earth is the Wayne Haig's ranch? You know, let me tell you, I Googled Monitor Valley looking for a map, and a map popped up with nothing in it.
That about describes it. It's a beautiful place located in the geographical center of Nevada, and the USGS says that it is the remotest place in the continental United States by virtue of its proximity to power. There is no power besides what we generate, no mail service and no phone service. So we like UPS out there because UPS will come to Pine Creek Ranch.
And probably about the only people that would go to Pine Creek Ranch, right?
You'd be surprised. It's a bit of a fishbowl. You'd be surprised if you come through Pine Creek Ranch, but nevertheless, it is very remote.
So it's how big was the ranch itself?
The ranch, acreage-wise, I don't know. The ranch is located in two valleys, Monitor Valley and Ralston Valley, south of there. It borders on the southern end the test site. And
the test sites, or are we like talking Area 51 or something?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Or the larger test range. As you know, a good portion of Nevada is taken up by the military for testing purposes, and Area 51 is just one part of that.
Mm-hmm.
And we also run on two mountain ranges in the Toyabe National Forest, actually, and that is Table Mountain as well as Mount Jefferson.
So how old were you when you found yourself on this ranch out in the middle of, literally in the middle of nowhere?
Well, my folks sold a ranch in California in 1978 and acquired that Pine Creek Ranch at that point in time.
And how old were you?
And I was a freshman in high school.
Okay. What was that like for a freshman in high school to find yourself? I mean, where did you go to school?
We moved with the cattle, so to speak. The ranch is 80 miles long.
Uh-huh.
And so we summered in Monitor Valley and summered and lived at the ranch there at the home ranch in Monitor Valley, and then moved with the cattle, so to speak, during the school year, and lived in Tonopah during the winter to go to school there.
Okay, good. It must have been kind of lonely out there, huh?
You know, my father had been raised on these open range outfits. As you know, mm-hmm. Nevada and the West has a long tradition of open range ranching that started with the first settlers when they first, you know, came
and
out to mine. And
that's a hugely significant point. What do we mean by an open range ranch?
Typically, so much of the West was unfenced. And, you know, you hear about it in movies, and you've seen, you know, John Wayne movies especially about the whole issue. But it was unfenced. People shared ranges in common sometimes or not, depending on who owned the water. And it was the under the prior appropriation water doctrine of the West that that came through Spanish-Mexican law, I might add, came through California law and was ultimately adopted across the West in the Supreme Court case of Kansas v. Colorado. But through that doctrine, ranchers were able to, the early settlers were able to lay claim to the water, acquire ownership of the water, and by virtue of that, claim and control and own the surrounding range.
Mm-hmm. So it really wasn't the land that mattered, it was the water.
Well, and at the heart of this case is the water, because if you look at people like Warren Buffett but Teeth Boone Pickens and others who are acquiring mm-hmm. water across the West, you will realize it's the new oil in the West.
Mm-hmm. Amen. We see where cities like Las Vegas and Los Angeles are literally fighting for their lives for water, right?
Well, and Las Vegas was implicated in our case in part as having been somehow working with the Forest Service and the Park Service to try to put us out of business. They have been actively seeking water in central Nevada for as long as I've been there. Mm-hmm. And, of course, now that water is going for a small fortune as Las Vegas is acquiring ranches to acquire the water rights to ship to Las Vegas. And we have a whole issue there of as a policy in the state of Nevada, do we want an Owens Valley type situation in central and southern Nevada where the water has been completely exported, agriculture completely destroyed by virtue of that, and so on and so forth. It's obviously Vegas needs water. There's no question about
sure.
it. But the question is how they go about doing it.
Well, I guess we should also say, folks, that not here with us today are members of the Sierra Club. It seems as though the 750,000 members of the Sierra Club were simply too busy to talk with us today about this situation. But it was a situation with respect to the taking of your ranch that it did involve the Sierra Club as well as other environmental organizations. Is that not true?
That's absolutely true. The National Wildlife Federation was probably the most high-profile organization involved because, in a strange twist of politics, our attorney general at the time we filed this case hired the National Wildlife Federation attorney to represent the state of Nevada against us in this case. When she left office and when a new state engineer came in and realized that our case was not trying to undercut Nevada water law, that in essence was asking that it be upheld and recognized and that we be compensated accordingly under Nevada water law, then Nevada ultimately came in on our side of the case.
Mm-hmm.
But initially they hired the National Wildlife Federation to represent them. It is, by the way, against Nevada law to do that, but as we know, sometimes our elected officials don't always follow the law.
But it appears as though the environmental organizations were very much working with the federal government in this situation. So not only was your father, Wayne Haig, fighting the federal government, but he was also fighting a lot of environmental concerns as well.
Frankly, I have to be very careful saying this because, by and large, the average Sierra Club member, the average member of any environmental organization is usually somebody who merely wants the resources managed well,
right.
taken care of,
mm-hmm.
not raped and pillaged, et cetera, et cetera. But the leadership of these organizations, if you follow the money in the environmental movement, it is a very fascinating study because the money largely is corporate. The money tells the story, quite frankly.
What do you mean the money's corporate? What do you mean?
Oh, When you study, there are books written on this, Trashing the Economy by Ron Arnold, which he documents and footnotes extensively the money that flows into the environmental organizations. And I'm not talking about the average Sierra Club member. I'm talking about the management, leadership, and policy setting of the environmental organizations. is largely driven by who writes the biggest check, and quite often it's corporate in nature.
If you want to get on that subject,
if you follow the environmental movement, quite often the issues that the environmental movement takes up, such as the spotted owls, I mean the owlar situation regarding the apples and so on and so forth, there is usually a political motivation behind it. And an
economic reason for that political
concern. Right. And the environmental organization becomes the red herring. The issue becomes the red herring.
Okay, folks.
Attention.
Folks, you're tuned into The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Today we're talking with Ramona Morrison, who's a daughter of rancher Wayne Haig, who waged a 30-year war with the federal government over his right to use federal land. When we get back, we're going to talk about the taking of Wayne Haig's ranch by the federal government. Grab your guns and sit down. We're getting ready for war right here on The Food Chain. Do stay tuned.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, we're back, folks. Today we're talking about a ranch way out there in the middle of nowhere, quite literally nowhere. We'd be in central Nevada, the remotest place in the United States. And the ranch belonged to Wayne Haig, who took on the federal government some 30 years ago over his right to use his land. Wayne has since passed on, but his fight goes on with his daughter, Ramona Morrison, who is here with us today. Ramona, what right did Wayne Haig have to that land?
Well, it's very interesting. He learned what rights he had out of several court cases that arose out of the California Cattlemen's Association, wherein, California Cattlemen's Association had sued that they should not have to pay, ranchers should not have to pay possessory interest tax on so-called public lands. And they lost both of those cases. And then moving into Nevada, of course, the ranch was largely on land managed by the Federal Land Management Agency. Mm-hmm. But all of our water arose on that federal land. So he realized when we bought that ranch that he owned something out there. And within the first year that we moved there, the Park Service came and tried to acquire the ranch from him. But all they wanted to pay for was the fee-patented land. And having just bought it, it was pretty fresh on his mind what he had bought.
Yeah, what is fee-patented land? What do you mean?
Fee-patented land means your patented land, what people commonly refer to as private land.
Okay, so they came out and said, "Hey, we want to buy your ranch."
Yes, but only the private land.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is all of the water rights, all of the range rights, all of the fences and improvements, the windmills, arise on lands managed by the federal agencies at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew he had bought something more than just that fee-patented land. And so, consequently, he said, you know, you have to do better than that. And that's kind of where it started. And from then on out, the federal agencies, initially the Forest Service, later the BLM, assistance in the environmental movement, you might say, set out to put him out of business.
Why did they want to buy the land?
I believe it's because of the water.
Mm-hmm.
The ranch had quite a bit of water attached to it, and Nevada has...
Not necessarily on the ranch itself, but attached to it.
Virtually none of the water arises on the fee-patented land, because those are parcels mm-hmm. that are down in the valley. The water arises either... largely on the mountains or in springs and so on and so forth.
So why did the government want to buy the ranch itself then, if it didn't have any water?
Well, you have to realize back then, and I've been involved in this for, you know, years, back then the notion of public lands was a widely held notion and believed by virtually everybody. So the Park Service people who he was dealing with probably truly believed that all they needed to pay for was the fee patented land.
Mm-hmm.
And but since he had just, you know, bought it, he sort of was pretty fresh in his mind what he had bought.
Right. And what he realized was, for the audience, is that by buying this land, I also acquire the rights that come with that.
The appurtenances, that's
right.
Correct.
And now these permits to graze and to use the water were passed down to the ranch since the mid-1800s, right?
No, that's not correct.
The permit
is a creature of the Federal Land Management Agency's that arose out of the adjudication process that both the Forest Service and BLM at different times were involved. Their job initially and their involvement in these western ranches initially was to adjudicate the ranges. In other words, just like you'd go through an estate adjudication, the property is divided among who owns what.
Mm-hmm.
And in the west, range lands were adjudicated by virtue of who owned the water.
Okay.
And so they came in and they drew lines around all of the various grazing, what we call now grazing allotments. They issued an official U.S. surveyed plat map for that allotment, and then and accordingly divided the ranges up among who owned what. But keep in mind, all of the property rights that arises on lands now managed by the federal agencies arose under state law. In other words, those property rights were in existence long before the federal land management agencies were ever created.
Mm-hmm.
Our property rights originate from the 1860s. The Forest Service came into being in the early 1900s, and the BLM under the Tailing Grazing Act much later.
Ah, okay. So your ranch, by virtue of these rights that go back to the 1860s, right,
yes,
had the right to the,
yes,
water.
And the range. And we made improvements. Our predecessors in interest made improvements. We built roads. We built ditches. We built pipelines. And our predecessors in interest. And all of those property rights came up through every deed, mm-hmm, as an appurtenance in every deed subsequently for every person that has acquired that ranch since. So what happened was
And Wayne knew this when he bought the land. He said,
right.
Okay.
But
fair
it
enough.
Was not widely understood. And this has been the problem. It has not, you know, our ranchers today are, in many cases, third and fourth and fifth generation ranchers.
Right.
And they have lost sight of what their great-great-grandfathers acquired. And so there has been, and then it has been aided and abetted, I might add, by the federal agencies who have been in a very strong effort to rename these lands to public lands. Now, there is an element of truth in that the public, since the 1866 mining law, has always had, and prior to that under Mexican-American law, always has had the right to go onto these lands, lay claim to these lands, and have access to these lands unless they were patented. And then a person acquired what we understand as a lodeal title.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
But on the other lands, on the range lands and so on, the public has always had the right of access and still does. And the only reason the public still has the right of access is because somebody, or I should say the privilege of access, is because somebody still owns the right of access, meaning the roads, the rights of ways, and so on and so forth. And those are usually owned by the rancher.
Okay.
And also mining companies and so on and so forth.
Right. And for example, if somebody were to claim mineral rights or something, they would have access to that land, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay,
absolutely.
Good. All right. So Wayne Haig owns the water and the right to graze on these lands.
Correct.
And then what happened? One day in 1979, the federal government shows up and says what?
They just wanted to buy the fee-patented land, and they were leaving out the majority of the ranch.
Mm-hmm. And Wayne Haig says, well, you can't just buy this little piece because all of the rest of it belongs to the ranch as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's my private property.
Mm-hmm.
And the federal government said what?
And they said it's public land, we don't need to buy it.
Ah, so thus the line has been drawn in the sand.
Correct. And then several years later, in one grazing season, which is about, I want to say 4 months, 4 or 5 months long, depending on where you are, we had over 70 visits from a Forest Service agent or certified letters, another, I want to say 70 certified letters. I mean, something almost every day from the Forest Service, mm-hmm. telling us to go fix a staple up on a mountain, 20 miles up on the mountain. I mean, it was harassment of the first order, and ultimately it culminated, and this is what brought about Dad filing the lawsuit. It culminated when they confiscated 100 head of cattle that were drifting. There was no fence, I might add, on a 20-mile area between the Forest Service and BLM managed land.
So the federal government becomes cattle rustlers and charges you for the privilege of their stealing your cattle.
At gunpoint.
Folks, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking about Wayne Haig's war with Wayne's daughter, Ramona Morrison. Wayne Haig had the Pinecrest Ranch in Monitor Valley, California, the most remote place in the United States, but it had water, and other people wanted that water. And thus, Wayne Haig's war. So when we come back, we're going to find out what happened when Wayne Haig was faced with the guns of the federal government, who were there to take away his cattle and his rights. Right back. One day back in 1979, rancher Wayne Haig went to war with the federal government over his right to that federal land. Wayne Haig's war is now in his 30th year, and though Wayne Haig has since passed on, his daughter, Ramona Morrison, continues the fight. We left off with sometime back then, I think it was 1991 or something like that, the federal government showed up quite literally armed to the teeth to take away Wayne Haig's cattle. And they, to twist the knife a little bit in Wayne Haig's back, they sent him a bill for stealing his cattle. Is that really what happened?
Yeah. And it forced my folks to shut down the ranch at that point because of the 20-mile unfenced boundary between the Forest Service and the BLM. The Forest Service at that time was the one that was primarily driving this. Mm-hmm. There was no way to keep cattle from drifting off over onto that range. And so they ended up having to sell all their cattle at fire sale prices at that time. And he determined then, rather than to go to federal district court, which is the court where the federal agencies always like to take a case.
Sure.
So
that way you can sue.
Yep.
We have our own court. Yeah, sure.
You have about a 6% chance of winning in federal district court. And the second thing is they have no jurisdiction over property issues over $10,000. So, you know, a lot of people go there, but they get trounced every time and then wonder how come things are so unfair. So he chose to go to the Federal Court of Claims, and at that time...
Can I ask a quick question? Mm-hmm. There's something that really concerns me here. The federal government came to your father and said, we want to buy your ranch, and your father said, well, you have to buy the ranch, but you have to buy all of its permitted lands as well, because that's...
Not permitted lands, all of its other, its appurtenances. The permit is a creature of the federal agency.
Okay.
And by the way, just to clarify for your listeners, the permit is a mere license. Mm-hmm. There is no law requiring a grazing permit on public... There is one requiring a grazing permit on public lands, but you have to make the distinction as to what are public lands. And in the West, public lands under the Supreme Court, as the Supreme Court has defined it repeatedly, and to this day, public lands are lands to which there are no rights, titles, or claims of another attached. Okay. Well, I can assure you, because I've done the title work on many ranches, there are rights, claims, and titles of another attached to virtually every square inch of so-called, what they label as public land.
So, but my point was that Wayne Haig said, I have these other rights that are part of my ranch here that you mm-hmm. have to buy as well. And the federal government said, we don't have to buy them. So you have a legitimate difference of opinions.
Sure.
Why did the federal government not go to court and say, and to adjudicate the situation? Why did they go to war? with your father? Why did your father have to fight?
It was said in depositions by a person who ultimately was at the time was the Nevada Cattlemen's Association president. He had been with the Forest Service on another issue, and they had indicated at that time that they needed to take the biggest, it wasn't the biggest ranch, but the most high-profile rancher out to set an example. One of the reasons Dad was high-profile was because he had written a book right prior to this called Stone River Rangeland. And in that book, which is, by the way, in the Supreme Court Law Library, and passed the muster of numerous attorneys and judges, in that book he identified all these split estate property rights that arise on federal land. And so he was a pariah to the federal agencies at that point, because they had been denying, and still do deny largely, that there are any private rights or split estate rights that arise on lands managed by the federal agency. The interesting thing is, when you get into court with these folks and you subpoena evidence, you subpoena them to provide evidence of title to these western lands, they can't provide one shred of evidence of title. In other words, the federal government only owns these lands in a proprietorial interest only, and they hold them in trust for the American people.
So they don't have a deed to the land?
No. In fact, the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, if you go back and read it, and this is consistent with most treaties, when the federal government, when the United States acquired the lands under the Guadalupe Hidalgo Treaty, which is most of the at least southwestern west, they acquired jurisdiction to manage, but they did not acquire, and therefore patent and so forth, but they did not acquire title.
Okay, good.
And so, that's the dirty little secret.
So the federal government looks at your father and says, we're going to make an example of you. So rather than just, going to court and having the issue settled one way or another, we're going to trounce you, and we're going to run you out of business, and we're going to make an example of you to all the rest of the ranchers in the West.
Yeah. And they set out to do that. They were able to get the National Wildlife Federation. We have evidence of collusion between the National Wildlife Federation, the Forest Service, and our bank at the time, Cigna Corporation, who held a note on the ranch in an effort to, they, through the three groups, set out a plan to foreclose on the ranch, even though our note was paid way in advance of the payment schedule, and was significantly paid down. And so when that was brought out by the lady who ultimately became my stepmother, Helen Chenoweth Page, on the floor of the House in Congress, Cigna Corporation backed off very quickly. And
so not only were they going to trounce you, but they marshaled an army of industry and public interest groups, and they were going to trounce you royally. They were going to...
Oh, they buy ink by the barrel. They hire attorneys that outlive anybody that ever sues them. Yeah.
Let me ask you this. Is all grazing bad grazing?
Well, I have a question for you and your listening audience. In Nevada, as an example, for anybody that's driven through Nevada...
And I have a thousand times. I love driving through Nevada.
What would you use that land for? I mean, short of condos, if a city was to crop up in the middle of nowhere, Nevada, what else would you use it for besides ranching and mining?
Cat ranches.
Yeah. And for recreation, certainly, and hunting. But hunting has always been a part of it. Where there are irrigated meadows where water is spread in the west, that's where you'll find your deer and your wildlife and so forth. Mm-hmm. So ranching and wildlife go hand in hand. But in Nevada, the livestock numbers, by virtue of the grazing permit, the government has used the grazing permit to cut the numbers across the west to about 20% of the original carrying capacity of these ranches. And now, instead of grazing these lands, quite often we burn these lands. And we've had massive wildfires, and highly destructive, catastrophic wildfires in Nevada especially, but across the west as well, because undergrowth has grown up, whether it's in the steppe-like...
Is there an industry that benefits from that?
Yes, the firefighting industry. You'd be interested to know, if you pay attention, how many fires start about 5 o'clock on Friday afternoon.
What do you mean?
The firefighting industry. Well, a lot of them are started by the agencies themselves. The gal in court in Colorado was ultimately convicted. She said she burned her love letter from her husband, and she was ultimately convicted. She was a Forest Service employee of having started that fire. There are numerous cases where forest fires or range fires start on Friday. It is a massive money-making venture. It is one of the primary reasons these agencies are in existence today is because they pass themselves off as being absolutely essential to defending urban areas from these forest and rangeland fires.
Quick break. Ramona Morrison, mm-hmm. daughter of Wayne Haig, and you, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Should private interests benefit from public lands? What do you think? Well, folks, what are you going to do when the federal government comes for you? Are you going to meekly give in to what they want and hope that they take good care of you? Or are you going to be like Wayne Haig and stand up and fight? Wayne has since passed away in a 30-year war, but his fight still goes on with his daughter, Ramona Morrison. Ramona, where are you getting the energy to fight the federal government?
I guess it's become a way of life a little bit. I grew up with it at such a young age that it's just been a part of our life. But I think that you have to look at the victories. You have to look at the progress we've made in over the years. And things, now when you talk about public lands, a lot of people understand that there's a little bit more to it than just mm-hmm. that the government owns it outright. When you talk about the environmental movement, now, a lot of people understand it hasn't always been positive, although much of it has.
Well, it always seems like they have a good motive, the motive here.
Or appear to have a good motive. Oh. And certainly the membership, the general membership usually do. But it has been used maliciously in some cases. But in our case, we just got a ruling down June 6th of this year, in which the federal government will be compensating us. This was the whole point of the takings case in the U.S. Court of Federal Claims. As an example, they'll be compensating us for our water. All of these things arise on federal land, I might add, mm-hmm. on federally managed land, I should correct. And that includes 238 miles of fences, 634 miles of fences, roads and trails that belong to the ranch, as well as springs and ditches and pipelines that were built by the ranch since the 1860s on. So the issue of compensation, as well as water, so the issue of compensation, which was the whole point, the government under the Fifth Amendment has the right to condemn land.
To take, yeah, eminent domain, right?
Eminent domain, but they do have to pay for it. And what they didn't want to pay for was anything arising on federal land, because the government's mantra all these years has been that it's public land, we don't have to pay mm-hmm. for anything out there. And this case, for the first time in 100 years, the last case was out of Yosemite National Park, but this is the first case in 100 years in which the federal government has had to recognize that there is something else out there besides the federal land management policy, that there are split estate rights arising on federal land. Mining claims are compensated for, and there's a lot of case law as it relates to mining,
right.
not with ranching.
Well, let's go quickly to the phones and pick up Lowell. Folks, the phone number is today, 800-624-2665 or 831-479-1080 here on California's Central Coast. Lowell, welcome to the food chain.
Hello, Michael. Nice to talk to you. My name is Lowell Webb. Ramona, nice to hear from you. I'm a member of your Stewards of the Range organization, which I'm sure you're familiar with.
Right.
Up there, and I followed your case for quite a while. Very pleased to see what happened in June, and hope it continues on the right path.
What's Stewards of the Range?
Stewards of the Range, we'll let Ramona explain that to you after we finish. I'm going to be quite brief.
Okay.
And I want to let you know that
it can't happen here, right?
It is happening here.
Absolutely.
What it amounts to right now, here in Santa Cruz County, where KSCO originates.
That would be our mother station here in California for those who are listening across the country.
Right. We've had a number of fires in this county, and the county right now, out on Larkin Valley Road, is attempting a taking of a young man's property. in order to give him a permit to replace his burned home. They want him to give away the bottom portion of his property. Without getting complicated on it, it's quite a mess. And he is fighting very, very hard. And this is happening also other places in the county.
Ramona, you say it's happening across the land?
Across the West. And the Kelo decision that just came down from the Supreme Court, a very troubling decision, to say the least, points to the fact that this, what Dwayne is talking about is happening across the United States, wherein government entities, whether they be local or federal, use their power and quite frankly, extortion sometimes, to try to destroy people's property rights.
Well, you know, when you say power, what I see and what I look at when I look at Wayne Hague's war is that the power of the government is not in the rule of law, but it is in the power of being able to sit on you like there's some 900-pound gorilla and they're just going to sit on you.
Government is a 900-pound gorilla, and that's what they intend to do. And what they're trying to do is implement something called Agenda 21 from the United Nations. And I'll go off the air because I'm sure that Ramona's very familiar with this.
Okay,
a little explanation of that would be in order.
Thank you very much for the call, Lowell.
You bet, Michael. See
you again. Appreciate it. Ramona, is it true that they're trying to get rid of cows on federally managed lands? We're going to pick that up when we come back from the last break, okay?
Okay.
Folks, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking Wayne Hague's war. What happens when the federal government comes for you? Will you be able to stand up and fight a 30-year war like Wayne Hague did? Or will that weight of that 800-pound gorilla sitting on your chest just deplete you of oxygen? Probably would me. I'm totally impressed with Ramona and her father, Wayne Hague. And when we come back, we'll finish. Is it true that the government is trying to get rid of cows on publicly managed land? Right back. Do stay tuned. Well, one day back in 1979, Wayne Hague went to war with the federal government over his right to work on his land that was deeded to him through various, I don't know what you would call them, deeds, I guess.
An interest?
Yeah, that. And he fought for 30 years for that right. And it seems to me like that the federal government was targeting you, or they would have just taken you to court. It seemed like they were trying to do something really nefarious, like put you out of business in a very public sort of way. Instead of just going to court and adjudicating this, they went to war with you and they sat on you like an 800-pound gorilla. We're going to pick up Rich really quickly. Rich, welcome to the Food Chain. You've got Ramona Morrison here. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. I just wanted to throw out something that I ran across just recently. In 1978, on October 5th, 30 years from tomorrow, Jimmy Carter signed a treaty with the United Nations, actually two treaties, and the first one was involving property rights, because it was called the United Nations Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, and it had to be ratified by the Senate, which I still haven't found out that they did that. Joe Biden was one of the people on the committee, but it allows the United Nations, under treaty, to abolish property rights in the United States. In other words, the United Nations can just take all of our property away.
I'd like to address that real quick.
Go ahead. Thanks for the call, Rich.
Okay.
One of the things that I've become a bit of an expert on as a result of this, the evidence in our case that proved our case was something called an exhaustive chain of title, not a title policy, but an exhaustive chain of title where the transfers of ownership is taken from the original patent to the present-day owner. And all of the appurtenances are also identified, such as the water rights, fences, and so on and so forth. That exhaustive chain of title supersedes treaties. It supersedes national bankruptcies. In other words, as a quick example, in the Middle Eastern Eastern Bloc countries of the old Soviet Union, in order for those countries to become a part of the EU at this time, they are now restoring title to the original property owners who had actual full title to that property, not the people who came in and claim jumped it, so to speak, subsequently as a result of the Soviet occupation. Title supersedes treaties, and it supersedes full title, not just color of title. A warranty deed won't do it, but a full title will supersede a treaty.
And you had that.
Yes, and that was the evidence. And I encourage people, if they're in any kind of property dispute, that they absolutely need to get their exhaustive chain of title done as the evidence and not go to court without it.
Is the federal government trying to chase public or private parties off publicly managed lands?
Absolutely. I think one of the things that I think would be very interesting to your listeners is the Western so-called public lands have been used, as I understand it, for years, since the earliest foundations of our country, as the collateral for the national debt. The problem is most of the values in these Western lands are owned by private interests. Split estate rights are owned by the ranchers and so on and so forth. And the water being the largest value portion of those lands.
The Western lands are collateral for the national debt?
And have been collateralized to the national debt. And so consequently, I think this push to destroy property rights, and it's always a red herring that's used to do it, whether it's
I'm out of time, Ramona, but I just wanted to say thank you so much for joining us today. Ramona Morrison, daughter of Wayne Haig and Wayne Haig's War. Thank you so much for joining us. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.